Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald from Ghost Hunters International, and you're listening to Para Investigators Radio.
PIR Radio is mainly an opinion paranormal talk show. All opinions, comments, or statement of facts expressed by PIR Radio's guests are strictly their own and do not represent or to be endorsed by PIR Radio, ASPRN, Paranormal Radio Network, and their affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome to PIR Radio. PIR Radio is sponsored by the Peach State Paranormal Society and www.hauntedtube.com. Let's now go get your paranormal radio experience with your hosts, Kurt Smith and Bill Horton.
Already it's Monday, and you know it's PIR Radio time. I know everyone out there, we didn't have a show last week. I was a little underneath the weather, and actually our guest, too, was a little underneath the weather. But we will get our guest from Maritime Paranormal rescheduled again in the future, and we'll get him on so we can have fun with him. But we have a great show lined up tonight. We have I think it's going to be an educational show, too, for myself and Bill. So before we get to my co-host, as always, Bill, but I got to give out our website. Don't forget, check out our website, www.pirradio.com, and you can get all the upcoming information about shows, podcast information, past guests, and all kinds of stuff. And if you're an iPhone or Android listener, you can listen live to PIR Radio on Pro. Just look on the front page. We have Radio Time and Stream Finder, so our streams are going live to them, and also Upsnap if you want to call in. As always, I have my co-host with me, Bill from, is it sunny today, Bill?
It was sunny and nice today in Philadelphia. Actually, a beautiful day here in Philadelphia. I can't believe it. It finally feels like spring is coming and the flowers are blooming and my allergies are dripping and, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's like we went from winter, we got maybe a couple days of spring, and now it's going to be summer. It's supposed to be 80 tomorrow here in Chicago.
Wow, great. Yeah, it's really nice. I'm glad it's, like, I'm still glad it's cool at night because then they can keep the air conditioning off and such. But, hey, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, my duties here at Tri-County PRS or DelcoGhost.com. You know, I do the case management. And interestingly enough, there's a case that was referred to us from another group here, and it seems to have some touches of demonic entities, sort of that kind of stuff and whatnot. So, very interesting, but I'm quite confused at it because it was referred and there was a good case report that was passed along that I read and then talked to the person. So hopefully we can go visit that and get back to you. But it's a really complicated case with a mother that doesn't know anything, the brother that might be possessed, and the children that are getting scratched and all this good stuff. Oh, you know about scratches though, right, Kurt?
Yeah,
we don't have to go into that anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm sure I've said it numerous times that it's been debunked.
It's been debunked, yeah. But so we have all this going on, and it's interesting. And now and then they said, well, maybe the first visit they only want one person to come. So what's your feeling about one investigator going to a strange location by themselves?
I think you should have two just to be on the safe side.
That's what I recommended to the group, and I'm going to recommend it to them. Just so one person can easily get confused and turned around and such, and you know, not be able to focus. You know, two, at least the other can, you know, it's kind of like having a co-host, right? You know, like, you can pick up the slack when I fall asleep, you know?
Bill, you always fall asleep.
Okay.
But, you know, we have anything else before we get to our show?
No, I'm excited.
I think we have a great show lined up. It's going to be, like I said, very educational. And we do have our guest on the line. His name is Sylvan Henry, and I believe he's from Canada. Is that correct, Sylvan?
That's right. I'm from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Yeah.
Oh, right on. So we've had quite a few people on from Canada. We've had Aaron from Maritime Paranormal, the medium. She's from more towards Maine. I think that's New Brunswick.
Yes, that's correct.
And then Paul Shishi. He's our UFO guy. That, I mean, we're gonna have him back on in June, and he's from I believe the Scarborough area. He's gonna kill me since I can't remember. I think that's up in Ottawa or something, close to that area. But we have a great topic tonight. We're going to begin discussing chemtrails. But before we go, do you have any websites or how people can contact you real quick? And we'll let you do it again at the end of the show.
Yes, I do. It's massactiondemand.weebly.com.
Awesome. And now you are a you're a researcher into chemtrails, correct?
Well, actually, my educational background, I'm a biochemist from McGill University, but I no longer work in that field. So I'm a director of marketing for a software company now, but this is my, it has become now my part-time hobby, so to speak, or how do you say, cause. And but go ahead with your questions, yeah.
Now, what actually got you interested in your cause? Because I friended you on Facebook, and you post a lot of information about your research on Facebook. So generally, what got you interested? How did you get drawn into doing chemtrail research?
Oh boy, I didn't know you get me with that question. I'm a very honest person, and the answer to that question is I hesitate to answer it directly because I don't want to lose credibility for the remainder of the show. But I will just say at this point that I noticed the chemtrail patterns in the sky, and discussed it with my son, and I said, look. I'm 53 years old, and I've never seen these patterns before, and this was about a year and a half ago. And he said, you know what, Dad, he said, neither have I. And he's, at the time he was 11 years old. And so I started investigating on the Internet to see what this phenomenon was all about, to see if somebody else noticed it. And it turned out it wasn't new. It was an old phenomenon that has been happening for several years. Now, what the phenomena that I'm talking about is when you look in the sky and you see jets flying at high altitudes, usually there's like a white trail of smoke. It's not smoke, but it's condensation that happens. And normally when I was younger, these condensation trails, contrails, as they're rightly called, did not last long and they did not persist. You know, they would just vanish. Okay.
Yeah.
But these other lines that we're noticing went from one city limit in the sky to the other city limit. So it had a beginning and it had an end. So it was basically, it started at the beginning of the city limits, ended at the end of the city limits. It persisted for hours, and they became clouds. And clouds are the specific formation. Now, I started observing these things and discussing with friends, and I created this group in Facebook, Mass Action Demand Chemtrails. And all of a sudden, I have like 1,300 members, and we're all posting like hundreds and hundreds of photos of our chemtrails. Now, if these were normal contrails, as I saw when I was younger, you wouldn't see, dotted patterns, for instance. Stop and go. A plane doesn't have brakes in the sky. It just goes. It doesn't stop. But sometimes you would see patterns where the line would start and then end and start and end. And then we would see different other patterns that didn't make any sense. So we did some further investigation ourselves into this, and some of our friends with some telephoto lens, a special like a telescopic lens with cameras, took some close-up shots of the airplanes and saw that there were no markings on the planes. They were typically all white. And from as far as we could see, it's very difficult to make out. There was no tail number, and there was no marking in the in the jet saying that, you know, what airline it came from. They were typically white.
Now,
and
go
ahead.
Just to let the listeners know, aren't all aircraft, you know, military or commercial, don't they supposed to be marked with a tail number and actually the flag of origin?
Well. Typically, yes, and but these didn't. I know military vehicles in Ottawa, we see them all the time, I don't know, for some reason. They don't have regular license plate numbers, and they have their own coding system. It could be that
And the U.S. government's the same way. I was in the Army, so yeah, the license plate's not even a license plate. It's just a number, you know, it's like a, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they have a different marking system, but they certainly were not commercial planes.
So it's interesting. You know, I'm not to throw you off, but I was reading on Wikipedia just now, and actually there was some in response to a petition concerned Canadian citizens, ooh, three C's, regarding chemicals used in the aerial sprays, and the Canadian government actually responded to this and said there's no evidence, you know, substantial evidence to this, you know. This is on Wikipedia, quite surprising. So the citizens grouped together and petitioned the government for an answer in Canada, you know?
Yes, I know that. I know I don't know him personally, but I know the guy in Ontario who started that petition. I guess he's discouraged because he got that response. But that was done several years ago. Last year, I did something. I created an email campaign, and I recommended people, not only in Canada, but in different countries, in the 26 different countries that I know from my empirical, you know, evidence that they're being sprayed. And I encourage people to email their national leaders, because this is a national, it's not a municipal issue, and because it's in national airspace. And certainly, we sent several hundred letters to the Prime Minister of Ottawa, Stephen Harper, back in June last year, and that was over a year ago, almost June this year. And we did not get any, reception notice. Yes, we've received your letter. We had no response at all. And so we did it a second time, 3 months later, 90 days after that, and still no responses from the government. We just had some basic questions, you know. Are you aware, Prime Minister, that this is happening? Are we funding this? And, you know, typical questions like this. What does the spray contain? And we have no responses. And I don't know what we have to do in this country or in the United States to get a response. Now, the response that was obtained several years ago, if you look into the details of it, they're saying that they're not aware. But did they look into it? You know, we did get a response from Ireland. One of the leaders in Ireland, a government leaders, said that they were aware that there were some spraying happening, but they were not aware that it was specifically containing the chemicals we claim that were being sprayed with, like aluminum.
Yeah, that's a good barium question. What are they spraying, or what would they spray? You know.
Okay. Well, some people in different countries, Australia, Canada, United States, UK, have been collecting rainwater samples. Okay. And now, after a day that there was some heavy chemtrail spraying, and these samples were analyzed in labs, and the laboratory tests cost about $50 or $60 U.S. for certain elemental metals like aluminum and aluminum oxides, and they do contain higher than normal concentrations of aluminum, barium, and in some cases strontium. And that seems to be the same kind of analysis results that we're getting in the different countries. Now, why are we being sprayed with this? I don't know. Is this part of geoengineering? In the technical term for this is stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. The government is investigating this, or has been investigating this, for about 20 years now. But I believe they've been spraying us for at least 8 to 10 years. And
It's funny how you say the government's investigating this, but they're still spraying us, you know. So you're kind of accusing them, I think. But I don't know if I'm reading that right.
Look, if you ask the government and they refuse to answer you, and if you know for a fact that in the past, as in the case in the United States and in Canada, we have civilian populations have been sprayed for a number of years with known carcinogens, for instance, yeah. Agent Orange, mm-hmm. You know, and they have, and this is without the consent or the knowledge of the populations. We know this has been happening for like 20, 30 years with different chemicals. So it is not absurd to think that this could possibly be happening again with less dangerous chemicals.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
There is a commission in Canada right now, a government commission, investigating how long and for what purposes we were spraying our forests with Agent Orange here in the province of Ontario, Canada. Well, and not only that, we had some volunteer teenagers planting trees and, you know, setting off balloons in the air for weather directions or whatnot. And these people were affected by it.
What adverse effects are these sprays having on people? Are you able to tell us?
I'm not a toxicology expert, okay? Aluminum oxides are very, very harmful to the environment and to humans, okay? We've heard of the known association between a possible cause for Alzheimer's, for instance, which is an epidemic right now in the United States, okay? Millions and millions of Americans are suffering from Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a direct correlation between aluminum and Alzheimer's. There are some other, dangers to the environment, for instance. It affects the acidity, the pH level of the soil. And it makes it difficult for certain crops to grow in this hostile aluminum-rich environment. And so basically our task, the reason why I created my groups was just simply to get the government to tell us the truth about this. If it's a conspiracy, let them say so. But they're not saying it's a conspiracy. And go ahead.
I wouldn't think they would admit to it like any other conspiracy. You have to keep it a conspiracy, you know? I mean, when you let the cat out of the bag, then it's done. So the good government would not be so privileged to do that. But I guess the other thing I kind of think about, like thinking back to Agent Orange, and I'm not sure what year you said this was done, but did they know that the effects of Agent Orange at the time that they were spraying, or were they still testing it or something, do you think?
Agent Orange was developed as a defoliant for the Vietnam War. If it's harmful to plants, it's harmful typically to humans. Pesticides.
The time they were spraying the forest up in Canada and these other people got affected, the Canadian government was not just testing this on the forest. They knew the results of this already.
Definitely. And for instance, you take the pesticide DDT, which is banned now, okay? They were actually spraying people with this, And directly, you could see, you go into YouTube and put in DDT spraying humans, and you'll find it yourself. And they knew that this was toxic to humans back then. Why they do such things, I don't know. Why they don't get sued for such things, I don't know either.
So the reason I brought that back up again, now it brings us back to what are they spraying now, with these chemicals now, and really is that what they're spraying, Do we know what they're spraying? I mean, just because it's traces in the water, I think we have to get a plane and go suck some air right through these chemtrails and get the actual chemical. I think that's what we need to do. That's my suggestion, but I don't have a plane that can suck air out of.
How high? I mean, you said they're in the stratosphere, correct?
Oh, it's very high. It's at a very, very high level.
So you almost
I guess that's the reason for that. It's for a maximum dispersion. It's very, very high. It'll spread with the winds and so on. It has possible other military uses. Actually, the word chemtrail was coined by the U.S. military. It was developed as a, it was considered like an exotic scalar weapon back, I don't know how many years, but that word has been removed from the internet general usage in the, and now, right now, if you do an internet search for strategic aerosol geoengineering, according to the government, it's being considered as a way to combat climate change, this and that. But if you look at actual satellite maps of different parts of the world, you will see these straight lines, via satellite from space. They're so prevalent all over the place.
Now, is there access for people to, you say satellite, to actually ping into a satellite to capture some of these chemtrails, or actually, maybe even get a close-up of an airplane? Do you have, I know you have telephoto lenses, but what about like a camera hooked up to like a huge telescope or something? You think that would work? I have no idea.
Well, actually, that's one of my contacts is in Toronto is thinking of setting up an automated system on top of his roof with a telephoto lens and an automatic machine that senses whenever there's a plane coming. You've heard of optical character recognition and facial recognition. Well, some software can detect something, and then they can start filming it. And they will start filming it at a very, very close range to see exactly what is happening. And so we want to get close-ups of this. And we live in a democratic country. Can't our just leaders just say if it's true or not? I mean, they would say no in the past, and that was the end of it. But we are persistent. We will keep and I'm not the only one who wants to know why. Many films have been made about this right now. One of them is What in the World Are They Spraying by Michael Murphy down in California, which is perhaps the most popular, most recent one right now. And that one contains, evidence and witness declarations from scientific experts in the area of, the soil experts. As a matter of fact, there's a senator in that film that says that they would investigate this further because this is not natural.
Now, do you think, you have 26 countries and you named Canada, the U.S., the Mexico. Now, just sticking on the Canada-U.S.-Mexico side, do you think there's like this is going to drive the conspiracy theorists crazy, but something to do with the North American Union? You know, is it like part of like the, you know, some people call it maybe the New World Order, you know, one world, one government?
Well, the possibility for that, yeah, the origin of the New World Order, which is a fact now, if you look at the different laws that they're passing. Sorry about my cat in the background. I just had to put her in the room because she...
No problem.
She makes a lot of noise there. Now... It started with the Security and Prosperity Partnership program, and it was changed to different names and so on. And essentially, what it is security and prosperity, primarily for elite corporations. It has nothing to do with common people, or else they would, tell us, why they are doing this, why they have done this already. Now, part of this agreement is that military from all three countries in North America, Mexico, Canada, United States, can cross the border even with weapons, okay, if there is a civil unrest or whatnot, okay. One example of this is the G20 summit that happened last summer in Toronto. It cost over $1 billion to assure the security of an event that lasts like 2 or 3 days. Now, that was the first exercise of the combined forces of Mexico, Canada, and the United States. I saw a video to that effect. And by the way, there is a name for this combined force. It's called U.S. NORTHCOM. It has a website, usnorthcom.mil, if I'm not mistaken. So these are not conspiracies. These are fact. The three military entities of these three nations are working together as one. As a matter of fact, they have their own uniform, a new uniform.
Now, Bill posted a link to the WikiLink, and, just looking at a high-flying jet leaving a contrail, I mean, looking at that, are all the planes, is there multiple, do they use, I know we keep jumping back and forth about chemtrails and jumping around, but one of the
There is a relationship between the New World Order and chemtrails in that the planes that we're seeing, I don't think they're coming from Canada. They're coming from the United States.
And do they use multiple planes to spread these chemtrails, or is it just one plane crisscrossing the sky?
No, they're using multiple planes because we see multiple lines, and sometimes we see parallel lines. And you actually see, and the most I've ever seen was 12 at once in one sky, one sitting.
Now, go ahead, Bill, sorry.
Do you see them, I guess when you're looking up the sky, and they cover a vast area, but do you always look to the south and see them, or can you, do you look in, any direction you always see them? I mean, do they change, or are they just always in one particular zone, space?
Well, in here in Ottawa, the most general direction is from south to north. But it's you see these patterns in the cities across Canada and across the United States.
And, you know, this might be just something as simple just to get the ionosphere lower so that the cell phone signals and radio waves just work better. What do you think of that? You think it could be that simple?
Well, if it is that simple, you think they do some toxicology tests before they would care about our telecommunications?
Yeah, I was being very sarcastic to the government.
Yeah.
It's okay. My phone's buzzing now. Wait, hold on. Just kidding. Anyway, yeah, no, I think it's interesting. You know, I never realized that it was so severe. I mean, I you look up, you see the jet trail, as they call it, you know, and I never realized that there would be more to the picture than meets the eye, and I never realized that these patterns, you know, that these are actually patterns. Now you're going to have me looking up at the skies because, matter of fact, I live close to an airport, so they come in that way, so I don't think they would be the planes that would do this either. But
well, that brings a good question. For, like, I know you can tell the difference. You've done your research, but for someone that say that listens to the show, you know, and they're going to go outside and look. I guarantee it. People listen to the show, they're going to go outside and look. Can you tell a difference between an actual contrail from a commercial airline compared to a chemtrail? Is there something that we should look for?
Yes, the difference is striking. A regular contrail from most jets. It might be just 10 times the length trailing, 10 times of the length of the plane behind, and then it disappears into nothing. So you just see blue sky behind it. But the chemtrail itself will spread from one side of from one horizon to the other horizon completely, and those chemtrails become clouds. And that's the main distinguishing point.
Before we go to break here real quick. I'm just going to let folks know that you talk about the chemtrails and how they turn into the clouds. The topic we're going to come back to is, are they doing cloud seeding? And I don't want you to answer yet. You know, are they planning, you know, that stuff to make it rain and all that? So before you answer that, we're going to go to a quick break. If you can hold on, that'd be great.
Okay.
Alrighty, folks, you're listening to PIR Radio and a lot. You know, it's been 2 weeks since we've done a show, so I'm kind of rusty. But we're listening to PIR Radio live tonight with Sylvan Henry. We're talking about chemtrails, and if you can, check out the website, www.pirradio, and, you know, we'll get back to you after these brief messages.
PIR Radio will be right back after these messages.
Are you a paranormal radio show host? Your podcast not getting enough hits, and you want more? There is a brand new solution for you. A free podcast directory for your paranormal listening needs. Visit Parapods at www.parapods.com. That's www.parapods.com.
Haunted Voices Radio Network welcomes our newest affiliate, Pro Paranormal Radio Online, helping to bring you the best paranormal experience. Check out Pro today by going to ParanormalRadioOnline.com for showtimes and a chat area to chat with other paranormal listeners. While there, check out the Encore shows where you can listen to many different shows and hosts and their podcasts that you may have missed during the week. Check out live shows and special broadcast shows that are live on location with special events. All of this and so much more can be found on ParanormalRadioOnline.com. It's about the paranormal, and it's all here for you. Once again, Haunted Voices Radio Network welcomes our newest affiliate, Pro Paranormal Radio Online. Check them out today. Listening to the Haunted Voices Radio Network.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled program on PIR Radio.
Alrighty, we're back live with PIR Radio. Don't forget we stream live to PRO, the Paranormal Radio Online Network, and you can also hear the simulcast on the People's Paranormal Radio Network. Don't forget about on the iPhone or the Android phone, you can listen to us live on StreamFinder or Radio Time. Just go to the front page of PIRradio.com and you can get the links to those. Tonight's guest is Sylvan Henry, and just a real quick shout out to Earth Wisdom. Earth Wisdom, person in our chat room, listening all the way from Adelaide, South Australia, and they actually posted a link to a pretty good, interesting, there's a couple, like six photographs on there about bizarre weather patterns in Australia, circular weather patterns, interesting. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I will after the show. Thanks for posting that link, Earth Wisdom. But before we went to break, we were discussing how the chemtrails, you know, are, you know, sprayed, and then they are dissipated into clouds. Is this, like, do they try to classify this as, like, cloud seeding to make it rain, you know? And then are they using the rain to poison, like, maybe, the, like, the ground and the drinking supply? Am I kind of being...
I don't know, but the original cloud seeding experiments, that or the origin of them, using, I believe it was silver iodide at the time, was a secret operation for weather modification for the Vietnam War. Now, they disclosed this, the unclassified the documents after the war, but what they did was, you know, the Vietnamese were in a jungle, and, you know, no matter how many helicopter attacks, they could never kill them because they dug tunnels underground under the trees, and they filled the sides with cement. So the only way they could win this war... Well, they tried Agent Orange, so that would remove the leaves so they could see where the soldiers were to shoot them. But even if they removed the leaves, it just would disappear in these tunnels. So they wanted to get them out of the tunnel. So what did they do? They practiced weather modification. They made it rain. They created, in Vietnam, they have monsoons. But they created super monsoons that actually flooded the land and filled those holes and just either drowned or chased the people out of these so they could shoot them down more easily. So it, weather modification started off as a weapon. Now, a little bit further, they went into and developed the term chemtrails, and the military in the United States developed that word, invented that word, and it was considered an exotic scalar weapon. In what context, I'm not sure, but if you look at, you do a patent search for chemtrails and strategic aerosol geoengineering, you will see that in some cases it is connected to the HAARP technology based in Alaska and some other countries as well, too. HAARP.
I was going to ask about HAARP, too, a little later on in the, you know, a little later on in the show. But you mentioned HAARP just real quick. Can you let the folks know listening what HAARP is, actually? Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. It's essentially like a giant... If you look at the HAARP territory in Alaska, it's a huge... plot of land straight was filled with these giant antennas, and they can create megawatts of power that they just focus into space and warms up a certain part of the atmosphere. And these rays can be directed also by filling the air with metal powder, which is, you know, is what chemtrails are. It's aluminum oxide powder. Now, one of the possible uses of chemtrails is as a lens, metallic lens, to focus the power coming from these HAARP transmitters, power stations up in Alaska. Now, the HAARP machine can create earthquakes. It can do other things, too. So you can have the weather modification power of the chemtrails combined with the HAARP in a specific way to do certain things. Now, that is one potential use of it. You know, there are other military uses of chemtrails, but also there are some environmental uses, so-called environmental uses. They say that by having this metallic powder in the air, you can reflect some of the sunlight away and decrease global warming, that kind of thing.
I don't buy it either, but because that kind of information, they'd be proud to say this is what we're trying to better and preserve the, you know, the atmosphere and this and the other thing. So that, yeah, I think, I mean, it's good to note that this is something that somebody's preaching, but I think it's a bunch of shit, if you ask me, you know?
Well, I agree. And a lot of independent scientists, when I say independent, I mean not connected to a government lab, have got enough courage right now, and they're standing up, and they're talking against this this notion that the global warming is going to do some disastrous things, and it's the human's fault, and we have to do something about it to solve it. If you look at Lord Monckton's research, he's a British royalty, but up in Scotland.
Yep, I've
he's
seen
one of the one of the main opponents. I know him, you know, through radio shows I had with him. He's going against global warming, and it is, I believe, it is a scam for collecting $330 billion a year from different countries of the world, because this is a planetary scale geoengineering project. If you look at the website of the Council on Foreign Relations, they refer to it as well, too. This is a project. There is a project for planetary scale geoengineering activity.
There's a guy's name I can't remember talking about, you know, and he lives in China right now, and I can't think of his name. Oh, it's going to kill me. I'll have to do some research. It's going to take me a while to find it. But talking about, you know, people making money on global warming, and I can't think of the guy's name. That's just going to kill me.
You know, I mean, so this HAARP thing, is that's been proven, do you know? Sylvain?
Well, look, HAARP was a classified and still is basically classified project. But if you look at the literature on the Internet, if you look at the documentaries made by CBC and others regarding the HAARP project in Alaska, you will understand why that, first of all, HAARP can be used to create earthquakes. The U.S. military has a number of earthquake-making machines, like they have an earthquake bomb. It's called the Multi-Ordnance Penetrator, MOP. They have other technologies to create earthquakes. Now, HAARP is another one that can be used to create earthquakes. And this goes back to the original founder of the concept, Nikola Tesla, about 100 years ago. It's an old technology now.
You know something that really, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Kurt, but I guess, you know, you think about not monsoons, what are the, when the earth shakes and the waves come in?
Tsunamis,
all the tsunamis and the other stuff. You know, not to add fuel to your fire there, but, you know, you think about the stuff that you're talking about, you know, when do they get to test this stuff, you know? And you think about some of these tragedies and these, you know, that occur, and I don't know. Can you put two and two together? You know, I don't know.
Well, all I can say is that anybody listening to this radio show will know. Anybody who's above the age of 10 years old will know that there's been an increase, a tremendous increase, in so-called environmental disasters. You know, earthquakes, tsunamis. You know, volcanic eruptions like the one in Iceland over Europe and so on. How many tornadoes did you have in the United States like 2 weeks ago? It's incredible. Like, it killed like 400 or 500 people. This is record. You know, you would hear about these things in the past. They would happen once every 5 or 10 years. But, you know, everybody knows about the tsunami in near the Sri Lanka and in Indonesia and the earthquake in Chile, and the one in Haiti, and the earthquake in Japan, and it's just happening at an increasing rate.
Now I was going to ask.
It's not natural.
With all these, you know, big natural disasters, you know, the earthquake in Canada, Haiti, not Canada, but Japan, Haiti, and Chile, and the tsunami. Was there any? You know, with the correlation with HAARP and chemtrails, was there any chemtrails reported in any of these locations before?
Yeah, well, if that's a very good question. HAARP has a website, okay, and this website, since the Japan earthquake, tsunami, you know, everything, the radiation, the nuclear radiation disaster. Ever since that disaster, the HAARP website has been offline, okay, because people have been noticing patterns. before an earthquake, before this, before that, you would have an increased activity in the, it's called the magnetometer or something like that. I can't pronounce it. But it people deduced that from the website, and they would go back to the website to see if there was an increase in activity. You know, you can pick it up real fast, and then people would look somewhere in the world if there was an earthquake or some strange phenomenon. There was a correlation, yes.
The website would give off, like, testing or some kind of other data? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, there was a graphical representation. People could see the graph. There was an increase in activity 1 or 2 days before major disasters.
Wow.
Is this a coincidence? Some people will say it's a coincidence. You know, why do they bother measuring this at these specific times? You know, so these are all possibilities that are worth investigating by the scientific community, especially by independent scientists.
Now, in regards to, I know we keep jumping, but, you know, these questions just pop in my head because I'm just processing all the information, but do you think they're, you know, with the chemtrails, in your opinion, are they trying to depopulize the world, you know? Because that's one of the goals of the New World Order is to depopulize, you know, the world. They want to kill off 70% of the people, somewhere around there. I don't know the exact number.
Well, you've got this great monument down in, I think it's Alabama, Georgia, called the Georgia Guidestones.
Yep, I used to live in Georgia, too, and you know what? I never went to it, and now I'm kicking myself in the head.
Well, if you, you know, do a Google image search on the Georgia Guidestones, you will see that it's written in stone, and these stones are like several tons each. And they write down what they see as the future of the world, and one of their main points is the depopulation of the world. Now, why would they do this in a public park? I don't know. I find it very weird. It is a possibility. I don't know. I see different scenarios. I just want the government to answer us. What are they doing? You know.
You know,
we know that the government typically has been secretive about a lot of things. Cigarette smoking, for instance, we know kills. Everybody knows, even kids know that, you know. But for years and years and years, the government would just protect the tobacco industry.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, when I was a kid, you could even buy cigarette packs in a candy dispenser machine, sort of like a candy dispenser machine. You put in coins, and you press a button, and, you know, I would go and get cigarettes from my parents, you know. Back in when I was younger, you would buy cigarettes in pharmacies. A lot of people remember that as well too, and the government wouldn't say a thing until there was enough pressure from people like me and from independent scientists and from concerned citizens who got together and made the change happen. And now they have to be labeled. This is toxic, and I predict other products will be labeled toxic, and you know. Eat or drink or smoke at your own risk. But now it's the question of breathing at your own risk, and we need to have an answer for that.
I hope
and we will persist.
As long as they don't classify like soda, because that's my bad habit. I love soda. I'm sure.
Well, actually, if you look at the ingredients for Coca-Cola, the caramel color, do a research on the caramel color for Coca-Cola.
I've heard something about that. Doesn't it cause cancer or something, if I'm correct?
Yes. Yeah, it's very, very toxic. It's something, well, toxic, I should specify, in lab rats, you know. I guess we have to wait and see what the effect is on humans. But sugar, just the sugar content is harmful for you.
I know, it's kind of, I have one wisdom tooth left, and it's kind of rotten out, so I got to get it removed. I'm like, ugh. And I know, you know, because I'm kind of bad with my diet.
Just keep drinking that Coke and swishing around that wisdom tooth. It'll decay really fast and you know, rot, you know. I'm just kidding, Kurt.
Dang, Bill. Then
sorry,
I,
Kurt.
Then I wouldn't be able, you know, if I had that tooth, you know, if it does that and then it starts hurting, then we wouldn't be able to do PIR radio.
Oh, man, I'll have to find a replacement.
No.
Anyway, sorry about that.
No problem.
But I do agree with, you know, and the Japanese prisoners that were kept in, like, Arizona during the war. The poor people, they were injected with stuff and tested with stuff, too, in this government. So I don't put it past our government to do any of this, or not to do any of this, you know? So I agree.
Yeah.
Now, do you run into a problem? I know here in the States we have the Freedom of Information Act. You can request information, get information, but half the time they go crazy with the redacting, so you can't get all. You know, I mean, that you can't get any of the good information. You just get a word here and there. Do you guys, are you able to get much information out of your government through? Do you guys have a Freedom of Information Act up in Canada?
Yeah, we do have a Freedom of Information Act here. Access to information, and the thing is, the process is long, and in certain cases, too long may take years, and in some cases they don't answer at all. I'm trying to see if there's another process that we can approach the government. The email campaign did not work; it was a failure. My previous email campaigns were very successful at a provincial and a national level, but this one failed completely. What I'm doing right now is I'm preparing PowerPoint presentations, and I invite the general public, including the police, members of the military, politicians, ordinary people, and to come and look at the evidence and, and ask questions. So I make a presentation, and the people look at this. They bring back a, brochure or and then they do research on their own and they make their own conclusions.
Have you thought about running for like political office? Is there maybe a political party or political aspirations down the road?
Well, actually, that's a good question that you're asking there. If I knew I could change things by being in office, I would do it. But in the past, I have changed things without money and without being in office. Like, for instance, I prevented, my son and I, along with some other people, prevented the fluoridation of our municipal drinking water supply in Gatineau, a population of about 300,000 people. It took 3 days. It was very simple. And at first, we didn't think we would win because the majority of the councillors of the 17 districts of our city and the mayor were basically sold on the idea. They had decided who to buy the chemicals from and the dispensing machine and so on. But then we made our presentation, and it was televised on national TV, but they didn't show us presenting. They just showed the counselors answering some of the questions. So the media is very, very selective in what it does. However, we won 17 against 2 against fluoridation.
Well, that's great, because fluoride here, that they're saying, this was just a kickback to the company that made it in this country. I just heard something about that about 6 months ago, huh?
I wouldn't be surprised. Some of the fluoride, compounds are found, are components of rat poison, of Prozac, of other products that do affect humans and other kinds of animals. And but basically, we didn't want a water filtration system for our city to become a medical dispensing unit, a distribution unit, for things like fluoride, and who knows. And right now in the UK, they're thinking of distributing lithium because of the bad economy. More people are committing suicide, and they figure, oh, put a little lithium. But you're prescribing something for the general population. I mean, infants don't have teeth. Why put fluoride in the drinking water? And senior citizens, many of them have lost their teeth. Why is it important for them? And yet it's been proven that they cause, fluoride causes skeletal fluorosis, causes osteosarcoma, causes a number of bad things. Our focus is clean air, no chemtrails. Clean water, no fluoridation. So we had different battles, and some of them we've won, and chemtrails is one we'll win eventually.
Well, that seems more of an international or quest, too, because the water you can do locally, but this other thing you have to do, more global sort of, or North America,
Well, I agree with you. That's why I'm using social networking sites like Facebook. Like, I have 1,300 members in my anti-chemtrail group, and they're from different countries. And I have some online forms that people fill out, and I ask them questions like, do you believe that chemtrail spraying is happening over your city? Most people say yes. Then I ask them questions, why are the pilots not talking about this? And most people have answered it's because they're threatened or because of non-disclosure agreements with the government. You know, soldiers do what they're told.
That's right.
That's what, you know, and so on. But I established from that online forum that I got responses, about 300 responses from 26 different countries. So that's something I found out myself. But I'm sure it's other countries as well.
Is that forum
except
available?
The Middle East. I don't see any traces of that in the Middle East.
Well, because they're on their own, you know, they're against most UN countries and such, you know?
Well, actually, I don't know. Libya, I believe, is a UN member.
Yes. Yeah.
Libya is, Syria is. I know that for a fact because they want to put Syria on the UN Rights Council. I just think the UN's a joke. I think we should, I don't know.
That's another subject to abolish the UN, is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because, you know, if you, I know we're going off subject real quick, but if you take a look what's happening in Syria, what that dictator's doing, and they want to put Syria on the Human Rights Council, that doesn't add up.
Right.
That just doesn't add up. I don't know. Maybe it's me.
No, I think you're right.
But now Sylvan, what's your goals for 2011? Where would you like to see your mass action demand group go in 2011?
The first thing we want to accomplish is to get acknowledgement from our leaders, our democratic leaders. We have a question. I'm going to get, and many of us are going to get, enough people to send them questions on a regular basis, but more specifically on a major day coming up this summer. And we demand an answer. We demand an answer. They owe it to us. They're there because we put them there, and they're not answering our questions. So I'm fighting right now at the local level and the national level. With the national level, international level, I'm working with social networking sites because it's easy and convenient. At the local level, I'm renting auditoriums and cinemas, and the cinemas are really inexpensive places. Like before noon, before they open, you can rent a cinema hall with 300 seats for about $200.
Oh, that's not bad
and
at all.
It's really, really good place.
Can
show them videos too.
Are you getting good good turnouts at when you rent cinemas?
It depends. Not for the chemtrail issue. For other issues, yes. For fluoridation, yes. I rented the Kailash Mittal Hall at Carleton University. And actually, Mr. Kailash Mittal, the creator of this hall, was one of my guest speakers as well, too. And we invited some experts from the United States, Dr. Paul Zaremka, who spoke about 9/11, and Dr. Paul Connett from the Fluoride Alert Action Network. He spoke about the fluoridation. And that was a very, very big turnout for that. But for chemtrails, people are very, very afraid.
But if you're out there, you know, educating, do you think you'll see an increase of people understanding what's going on and understanding why you're doing what you're doing?
I think so. And one thing I did once, I took the city bus, and it was full of Air Force uniformed officers. I said, oh, my God. I said, hello. I sat beside one of them, a lady officer. She had 3 stripes. I don't know what that means. She was with the Air Force. I asked her, I said, do you know about chemtrails? She started screaming at me in the bus, you know, calling me a conspiracy nut and this and that. And I said, ma'am, I said, look, I'm not a conspiracy nut. I'm willing to go to the Air Force base and give a presentation of what I found. We don't want to see your presentation. We don't want to see your evidence. You don't have any evidence. Ma'am, you don't even know me, you know. And she left the bus, and the other officers were looking at her as if to say, oh, calm down, you know, you're overreacting a little bit. And I could see by her reaction that she's hiding something. Or else she'd just laugh it off, you know, if I'm just a nut, you know.
Or she knew something more. Or she seemed to be well-researched about, or, you know, versed about this subject then, too, you know. I don't know.
I think the other officers were probably were, but you know what? You know, if they get asked about it, they're not going to go off the wall like the lady officer did, I think.
Right. And I figured they didn't want to make a scene by ganging up on me and, you know, and making me feel bad, you know, because that wouldn't be Canadian soldiers are not like that.
See, I would just turn off the bus, that's all, you know? That would, you know, no sense in making a big scene, just... No, I'm just kidding,
Bill. But hey, Sylvan, we got a question from the chat room. It's from Earth Wisdom. They want me to ask you to explain why the U.S. Army, Air Force, Navy, why they want to control the weather by 2025.
Okay. As originally, as I said earlier, weather modification. Experimentation was done to win the war in Vietnam, but even with that, they still couldn't win, and they left, okay? These little guys with these little guns, they had a lot of persistence, and so the Americans had to leave, okay? But now, if whoever controls the weather controls food production, okay? There are some weather modification companies in the United States. I think one of them is Weather Modification, Inc., and so on. There's several of them. And they're huge, okay? They have their own little airports, and they have these huge planes. And they're paid by the government sometimes, or by farmers, okay, to direct some rain in their area, okay? So, because especially in the southwest of the United States, rain is such a big issue. You don't have much water down there. It's a lot of desert area. Now, why else would you want to modify weather? For instance, it was said that the Chinese use a different approach to weather modification. They shoot rockets, and that rocket explodes in the air and releases those chemicals. And during the Olympic Games in Beijing, it never rained, because after that, the Chinese government admitted that they made sure it didn't rain. So if you want to control food production, you control the world, okay? If you prevent rain from falling over a section of Africa, okay, the people just starve and die. I hate to think that this is what it's being used for. It is a possibility. We have the technology to do it. Whether it is being used for that, I don't know, okay? I don't want to start blaming things. But certainly it is a way of controlling, you know?
Well, water rights is a big to-do, you know? Water rights and access to water, you know, all over the world, not only in this country. Still, this country has a lot of problems with water. But, you know, it could be devastating, like you said, to change that.
Well, in the United States, I forget what it's called right now. It'll come back to me in a second. The sheriffs are fighting the federal government in some cases, okay? When a farm owner... production farm owner dies, okay? Sometimes they get the farm, the heirs to the farm get a visit from the federal government in the United States, especially in the Southwest. And these people are there to take over the water rights, because whoever raises cattle has a big amount of land, the cattle have the right to drink the water, okay? Now, in some cases, I think it's called Oath Keepers. Yeah, Oath Keepers down in the United States. The sheriffs are fighting the federal government of the U.S. They're telling them, you're not going to take the water rights away from this deceased person and so on, because it still belongs to them. It's passed on from generation to generation. And they send these federal agents back out where they came from. There is a big concern about controlling water supply. For what reason? I don't know. Is it for food production, or is it for drilling operations, oil drilling operations?
It's about money. You control the water, you can control the world.
Oh yeah, it's
And there was I hate to admit it, but I watched that show Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, but he had something on about the water conspiracy. You know, they're draining Lake Michigan, and you know, it's like the Chinese are like taking over. They want to take over the world by controlling the water supply, the world water supply.
look at the Colorado River in Vegas, man. That they suck up more water, you know. Sin City, man. If the government's going to do anything, you're going to let that thrive. But I don't know. They're having a hard time right now. Anyway, that was my little.
Well, I think you know people are getting more smart. Like all these revolutions around the world. You know, the uprisings. People are tired of government. You know, they're not listening to us. You know, we vote them in, but they don't listen. You know, and people are starting to take a stand. You know, they're standing up for what they believe in.
You know, I think the one thing I do agree with you, Kurt, that's a great thing. I immensely respect these people in these countries for putting and dying for these uprisings, because unlike in our country, people probably die too, but these other dictators will shoot them first and then continue on, you know. But in our country, you know, we have laws that really baffle me, because during the Republican National Convention, they had a law in the city. I don't know if it's a federal law or state law or it's a local law, that if there were seven people assembled on one corner, that they can be regarded as a hostile something or another and arrested for protesting.
Oh,
a group of seven or more or something. I forget the whole circumstances. Oh. But, yeah, so that meant, you know, if seven of you on the corner waiting for the president to go by, you could be arrested, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that was the crazy law that they had during there. So and then they had the thing that bothered me the most was I wasn't protesting the Republican convention for sure, but they had a caged area, a fenced area where the protesters could assemble and properly protest, you know, four blocks away or five blocks away where they wouldn't be seen. But
they wouldn't even get their point across though. That's not I'm sorry, but that's un-American.
Yeah,
you have the right to assemble, you know.
That's right. Anyway, that totally went off topic, I think, but sort of.
But there is a positive sign, though, and I'm feeling it now. The thing is that people are waking up, and when they're watching mainstream media, I don't want to name names, everybody knows who they are. You watch TV news, and people are, they're seeing that the news casters are trying to protect the government and so on, and the government's always right and so on. But as is happening in Canada, will probably happen in the United States, the mainstream media in Canada is dying. They're going bankrupt. One newspaper, one TV station after another, they're going bankrupt big time. Because people are getting their information from the internet, from social networking sites, from emails from other people, from tweets, from the side stream media is becoming more powerful. It's happening very, very rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Facebook is huge.
Oh yeah, it's and like your radio station, for instance, is doing immense good. And one day, radio stations like yours will become mainstream media. And especially if it's evidence-based.
That's right.
You know?
And that's what, you know, what we like, you know, we like good, you know, strong debate, you know. We don't make fun of no one. We want to, you know, we like to bring on guests and, you know, give them the opportunity to present, you know, what type of research they do, if it's whether it's paranormal or, you know, if they're a conspiracy theorist or, I mean, we've had UFO people on. I mean, we give them the opportunity. We want them to give the, you know, let the folks listen to what they have to say, you know, and then they can go on and the folks that listen to the show can do their own research and have their own opinion.
Exactly. Like myself, I don't believe in UFOs that much. I don't have the evidence, but my son does believe in it. And next week on Wednesday, I'm having a meeting with the former defense minister of Canada, Paul Hellyer, who was a big advocate of UFOs. Matter of fact, built the first UFO landing base in St. Paul, Alberta, in Canada, back in 1967. He was a minister of defense a long time ago. And I'm having a meeting with him in a hotel to discuss a number of things, to discuss chemtrails, among other things.
That's awesome.
And I have an open mind. If the guy tells me about evidence and shows me pictures, you know, he's 87. I'm going to jump at this opportunity while he's still I still can meet the man and learn from him. And if he says something that makes sense to me, then I'll believe it.
Awesome. That's
awesome.
I mean, that is.
Maybe he could be a very good guest on your show as well, too.
That'd be awesome.
Well, let me know how your conversation goes, and then, you know, if we can, we can bring him on. We're open to anything. We don't hold anything back. We love, you know, to have people on, you know, to present their, you know, their side of the story, their research. We would love to.
And it's appreciated. Really appreciate it, and I thank you for the opportunity you gave me to present at least a few of my points.
Oh, you know, we'd love to have you back on to, you know, just to get an update on how things are going, if there's any new information, more research. We'd love to have you back on in the future again. We would greatly appreciate that, definitely.
I'd love to be back on.
Awesome.
Yep.
And maybe, you know, not you know, trying to, you know, stir trouble, but, you know, maybe we can have a lively debate with. We can find someone that's a skeptic. That way we can, you know, give him the evidence and, you know, hear their side of the, you know, what they think. I think
sure. That'd
be interesting if you're up to that, Sylvan.
Oh, absolutely. I actually I was on a New York City radio talk show once. I was invited to debate against. I can't remember his name now. I think it was Michael John or something. I'll have to check that up. It was a year and a half ago. And he was a speechwriter for the Bush family.
Oh, wow.
And I was a little intimidated by that, but when I heard him speak, and I realized, my God, this is going to be easier than I thought. So I let him talk, and I didn't interrupt him. And he was just sinking himself deeper and deeper and deeper. And then finally, some people started calling in, ringing the phone there on a radio show, and they basically asked him, could you please ask this guy to shut up and let Mr. Henry speak and say his mind, you know? We want to hear both sides. And so, and then basically the bottom line of it all, he said, I said, you say that the economy is going well in the United States, and then I said, do you happen to know who Mr. David Walker is? Oh, and he shut up right away. And David Walker was the head of the General Accountability Office administration in the United States. He was the bookkeeper of George Bush, okay? Right now he's not working in the government anymore. He has his private consulting agency. He's saying that the United States is going to be bankrupt by this date unless major things are going to be happening. And I told him this and he didn't debate it at all. And then he was saying that, we're winning the war in Iraq. I said, yeah. I said, I contact veterans from the United States. I email information, and sometimes I talk with them on the phone. And do you know how many attempted suicides there are each week? And do you know the reasons why they're killing themselves? And he started to be quiet, because it's incredible the number of troops that are shooting themselves with their own weapons in Iraq. For different reasons. And one of the reasons is that there is a significant percentage, perhaps as much as 50% of the troops up there, that are essentially consultant soldiers or mercenaries hired from the private sector. They get paid more than the U.S. soldiers, okay? They have better conditions, you know, in terms of better vehicles, that kind of thing. And it's just unjust, I find. But, you know, and he didn't like me talking about these little details. And I said, no, the United States is not winning, has not won the war in Iraq, and I don't see them winning it ever.
Hmm.
But I see them being in different countries in Iraq. In the Middle East. And right now you're in four countries, Pakistan, Libya, Afghanistan, and Iraq.
We're just spread too thin again, you know?
Oh, okay.
You know, that's how I look at it, too.
It's time to leave those countries, but...
One of the main reasons why the American government hired these, I call them mercenaries, is because if they didn't, they wouldn't have enough troops to make significant progress over there, and they would have to bring the draft back in, or as we call it here in Canada, the conscription. In other words, people have to go to war.
We don't want that here. That wouldn't make people happy. But hey, Sylvan, we have to wrap up here. We have to get off the air. But
okay.
But before we do, we always let you give any shout out. If you want to give any shout outs to anyone out there, feel free to, and also let the folks know listening live or on the podcast how they can reach you, whether it's a Facebook page, a website, email. Go ahead and
okay.
The mic's all yours.
Oh, okay. People can reach me at sylvain.henry@gmail.com. Sylvain is spelled sylvain.henry@gmail.com. And my website is massactiondemand.weebly.com. And in Facebook, you just look for Mass Action Demand, and you find out that I have like many groups there.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you spending an hour with us and you know teaching us and giving us an educational background on what chemtrails are, and hopefully in the future we'd love to have you back on for another good discussion and just to get an update on how things are going.
Oh, we will win, and we will win with words peacefully.
Awesome. We really appreciate it, and the podcast probably won't be up till tomorrow. I got home at work at 7:30 and had to be on air at 8:00 Central Time, and I got to go eat dinner, and I got to be up at work at 4:30. So I'll have the podcast up tomorrow evening sometime, and I'll send you a link to the podcast too.
I really appreciate it.
We really appreciate you coming on, and you have a wonderful evening.
Thanks, and you too, both.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Same here.
Have a good night, Sylvan. Thank you.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Alrighty, Bill, you still here?
I'm still here.
That was interesting. That was a great show.
I loved it.
I mean, people are going to say, like, that's not paranormal, but you know what? It brings a topic that, you know, I don't think a lot of people really understand, you know, and hopefully we got the basic information out there, and hopefully the listeners love the show.
And I think the gist of it, I think I agree with Sylvan and people like him, that these government watch groups that actually observe and see something and then talk about it. That's the only way that keeps people that don't give a shit about anything safe.
And what he's doing, I think, is amazing. I mean, he spends a lot of his own money, you know, trying to, you know, educate people, you know, and going, hey, look what's going on. Just give me a chance. Listen to what I have to say. You might be a skeptic. You might be a naysayer. But give me a chance. Let me present my evidence to you, and then you can make a determination about what's going on after you hear, you know, and it's just like paranormal. I think if more people were like that, you know, if more people were just, you know, let me present you with this, you know, and then you can make a determination.
And I don't think it's far off the topic. You know, I actually like the conspiracy theory subjects and the X-Files guys and all the other stuff that we get. So I think it actually adds a nice icing on the cake for all the rest of it, you know, because I think it blends in.
And we're open to any topics on PIRE, on, you know. You know, it's like, why not?
Like the others.
You know, we're not strictly ghosts and spirits. We delve into many different topics.
And one day we'll talk about unions.
Maybe. Could if you want to.
Oh, I don't know, Kurt. We're on that street, so we'll have to see. After I lose my job, then we'll talk about it.
But you know what we have next week?
I don't.
I think it's actually going to be our first show ever with this topic on PIR Radio. We have Tom Biscardi on. We're going to talk about the Bigfoot hoax and Bigfoot.
Oh, you know what? I love Bigfoot.
I don't think we've had a show about that. If I can, I'm going through.
Totally into it. So
it'll be something new for PR Radio. See, you know, we're
trying to think what the Bigfoot hoax is, but let's leave that till next week.
You remember the Bigfoot?
No, don't talk about it.
Okay.
Leave it next week. Yeah, so, we got to keep the audience on edge.
You got any shout-outs before we go?
That's it to Lori and to the group, and hopefully we'll get this demon. That's it.
Awesome. Thanks again to Sylvan Henry for coming on PIR Radio tonight. We really appreciate it. Coming on and spending an hour with us. So until next week,
keep it paranormal.
And hopefully you'll get your paranormal radio experience with PIR Radio. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to PIR Radio. Come back every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the ASPRN Radio Network and the PRO Radio Network to get the very best in paranormal radio on the Internet. Please visit our website at www.pirradio.com. PIR Radio is sponsored by the Peach State Paranormal Radio Network and www.hauntedtube.com.